Thank you, Brother Mehdi, for those beautiful words. I'd like to again make the announcement that for those interested in participating in the quiz competition later, the registration is outside at the first table on your left. I'd also like to make the announcement that those sitting in the back, please move forward, as well as those whose children are not with them, to please bring them with you and not have them running around. Our first presentation of the night will be by Brother Qasim Jaffery, who will inshallah give us a brief insight on the context of the late Imam's revolution, as well as applying it into our practical lives. Please welcome Brother Qasim Jaffery with salawat.
Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to start by thanking the organizers for giving me the chance to present to you on a topic which I can say that I clearly don't have enough ma'rifah to speak properly about the Imam and his life and the importance of his life. But nonetheless, I thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to at least try my best to even scratch the surface of this great character's life. I'd also like to ask the organizers why they didn't put me after Brother Ibrahim, because I know he really knows how to work up a crowd, and he would have made my job a lot easier if you guys to pay attention. But inshallah, you will all get a chance to hear him do what he does best. I'm going to need a little bit of help from the computer about switching slides and stuff, because this is a PowerPoint presentation, and hopefully that will allow you guys to all follow along with what I have to say. So, my presentation is titled Imam Khomeini, Revolution in Action. And I chose this title because I wanted to see if it was possible to take the aspects from the life of the late Imam and see if this gathering as a whole can try to reflect on and inshallah implement some of these aspects into our own lives. We are here to commemorate the life of a great personality, and the best way to do this is not to let this life remain in the history books and the documentaries, but inshallah to take these aspects and turn them into action for ourselves. So my focus, like I was telling some of the brothers beforehand, it's not necessarily on the events of the revolution itself, because what we have to understand is the revolution was an event, but it took a whole person's life and a whole country's collaborative actions to come to that point of revolution. So it would best serve us, I believe, to look at the life of the Imam and hopefully try to glean what we can so that we can take away something from it and inshallah see what it would take to get to that point again. So next slide. So first I want to rewind. And instead of looking at the life history of the Imam, I want us to frame his life in the context of a history of the revolution. A revolution that took some time to develop and the right person to develop it. It couldn't have just started on the spot. Sorry, it couldn't have just started on the spot decision to enter the political scene. No, Imam Khomeini took years of time before he entered the political realm. His legacy was a product of hard work and self-reformation. He didn't even enter the political scene until 1944, when he was well into his 40s. And I mentioned that although Imam Khomeini was not the only player of the revolution, he was the driving force, and without him, none of what we see today would be possible. If you could go to the next slide, please. So early childhood. So if we're gonna look at the early stages of the revolution, we should look at the environment in which the values of its leader were instilled. Imam Khomeini came from a family of scholars, including his father, uncle, in-laws, etc. He was a descendant of our seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So to say the least, he was surrounded by an atmosphere of scholarship and people that were well acquainted with the religion of Islam. also unique to his upbringing was that he lost his mother and his father at a young age. His father when he was only an infant, and his mother by the age of 16. So to think about this, the life of the Imam, being brought up in an environment of religion, but also in an environment where he really didn't have a father figure in his own father. So he was mostly brought up by other family members, and his mother and great aunt passed away early on in his life. Despite this, we still see the Imam became a Hafiz by the age of 7 and began to study the Arabic language. I don't know how many of us can confidently say that we've accomplished so much at such a young age, but alhamdulillah, the Imam was able to do so, the late Imam. So next slide, please. At this point in my presentation and throughout the presentation, I'll have these moments and points of reflection that maybe we can look at and kind of dwell on how this relates to our own lives. So I'd like to take a moment to reflect on the environment of the upbringing, like I mentioned. Imam Khomeini was brought up in a house of scholars, an environment that was primed for spiritual growth. But does this suggest for us that our personal upbringing stops us from following the line of the Imam or the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam in general to the full extent? Because when I think of my upbringing, yes, my parents did teach me the recitation of the Quran, and you know, we did have communities, but it wasn't to the extent that I had scholars in my house or something of the like. So is this supposed to be a hindrance on us? Should we stop and say, hey, we didn't have this kind of environment ourselves, so I can't be at the level of the Imam. I can't be at the level of our Ahlul Bayt or the Prophet. I didn't have these kind of things available to me. Well, the short answer for myself when I was thinking this is that we may not have been raised in the environment that would allow us the spiritual level of Imam Khomeini at a young age, but we should still think of what we want for our future generations and what it will take to achieve that. And what I mean by that is, when we have children, when we have our future generations, what are we going to do to kind of emulate the Imam's life and maybe give our children and our future the opportunity that maybe it was difficult for to be provided for us? What steps are we going to take in order to make that kind of life for our future generations? I don't want to digress into that point, but just for self-reflection, I do want to take a look at the focus of some of the Imam's early studies. And when looking at the top three subjects of interest, we don't see any topic directly relating to politics, which seems to be synonymous when mentioning the life of Imam Khomeini. You think Imam Khomeini, you think political revolution. But what we often overlook, maybe, is that his revolution was manifested in the political realm, but it took a solid grounding in logic and philosophy, irfan and spirituality, as well as an in-depth understanding of the Quran as far as tafsir goes. His life was definitely later defined by a fusion of this Gnostic and political concerns, but his spiritual refinement was what came first. So I had come across an excerpt from one of Imam Khomeini's writing that I wanted to mention. It was intended for seminary students, but if it is possible, I want as many students in here or anyone who has recently or in the near future plans on taking their end of the year finals or board examinations, whatever level of studies you may be at, or if you're in the past the educational stages, even if you're working, if you can just kind of go back and take a look at the year that you know has just passed. For us, it's been an academic year, but even taking this point from last year. So let's see if the Imam's advice applies to our situation. He says, yet another year of our lives has passed. You young people are advancing towards old age, and we old people toward death. During this academic year, you have become aware of the extent of your learning and study. You know how much you have acquired and how high the edifice of your education has been raised. However, with respect to the refinement of virtue, the acquisition of religious manners, divine learning and purification of the soul, what have you done? What positive steps have you taken? Have you had any thought of refinement or self-reformation? Have you had any program in this field? Unfortunately, I must submit that you have not done anything striking, and that with regard to reformation and refinement of self, you have not taken any great steps. So if you notice in this whole thing, he's not saying you haven't done anything, but he is saying that what have you done striking, what have you done so great to change yourself throughout this year? When I think back to I just finished my first year of medical school, alhamdulillah, and all I can really think about is, yeah, I kept up reading Quran every once in a while, and maybe I read Dua Kamil every few Thursdays, but I can't recall any major refinement of character or any time where I stepped back and really thought to myself, hey, I should really be building myself while I'm learning all these new things in my life. So just for us, I know some people are taking their finals soon or maybe haven't taken their finals yet, or you know, just to think about that, what have you done this year outside of just your academic schoolwork though? And another important fact that I came across was that the Imam said that we should choose a teacher of morals for yourself and arrange sessions for advice, counsel, and admonition. You cannot become refined by yourself. So when thinking, yes, self-reflection is definitely important, self-reformation is important, but you can't do it alone. And so it's important, I think, to get together in gatherings like this and gatherings in our communities, inshallah, and hopefully we can take steps towards that end. Okay. So this slide is coming back to the point that I mentioned before, that Imam Khomeini chose not to enter the political scene until his 40s. The Imam recognized where he was personally in his studies and that he should trust the scholars at the highest level on their decision at the time to remain relatively passive in the face of the oppressive regime at the time. He also recognized that he would have no popular national support if he tried to undermine the most learned scholars and instead expressed his political opinions through privately circulated poems. And I was hoping, like I said before, that we would see an example of this with Brother Ibrahim, but inshallah after this, you'll get to see an example of that. So when Imam Khomeini did begin revealing the political dimensions of Islam, he began by citing a verse of the Quran from Surah 34, verse 46. The Quran says, "Say, I enjoin but one thing upon you, that you rise up for Allah in pairs and singly, and then reflect." So this rising up, it implies both spiritual and political dimensions that we saw earlier in the foundations of Imam's life, because like we said, he first started with the spiritualistic studies and then moved on to political. And it also implies that we're rising against some force which is contrary to Islam. We're rising against something that if we want to have an Islamic state, there has to be some force that's stopping us from doing this, and Imam is telling us that we need to rise up against this. Now keep in mind, this is in context of Iran at the time, not necessarily for all situations that we are in, but he used this in context for when he was starting his revolution in Iran. Okay? Now you may have noticed that my last slide was titled The Seeds of the Revolution. And this one is titled The Fruit of the Revolution, but I've added a question mark at the end. And I added this because I want to know, have we maintained the product of the revolution that Imam Khomeini started? We see posters and slogans, but what have we truly retained from the revolution as an ummah? We are fragmented on all levels because we lack an Islamic public mind. We have no political solidarity, no Islamic economic market, no coordinated defense policies, no common currency. Why is it that only certain factions of Arabs will stand up in solidarity for those in Libya and Egypt, but we hardly see consistent voice throughout the decades for Palestine? Where is the support? Where is the support for our slain brothers and sisters and the innocent people in Bahrain? This is plaguing even our own communities. In 2006, during the war between Hezbollah and the Zionists, I remember seeing the streets of Dearborn filled with waving Lebanese flags with thousands of protesters. Just 2 months ago, when I was back home visiting, there was a protest for Bahrain. And there was barely 100 people at this protest. So what I want to say from this is that we need to show consistency across the board when it comes to oppression, whether it's 60 years of oppression in Palestine, or if it's recent or ongoing oppression in countries like Bahrain, Libya, anywhere else that we see these oppressions. We need to be consistent across the board and stand up at all costs whenever it may come up. We are divided on so many crucial aspects necessary for progress, but do we at least have a common enemy? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says we do in the Quran. He says, of certainty, shaitan is an enemy of yours, therefore designate him as an enemy. We are divided on so many crucial aspects. And some people don't like the idea of having enemies in society. Maybe it's difficult to pinpoint what constitutes as shaitan, as the ayah mentions. But let's then look next and ask ourselves, did the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam have enemies? We make this claim that we want to follow Allah's Prophet, but we don't want to have enemies. We want the people to like us. We don't want anyone to think negatively of us, because how then are we going to be accepted in society? But how is it possible for Islamic leaders, or quote-unquote Islamic leaders of today, to want to be enemy-free? Is this attitude not only contrary to the Quran, but the Sunnah as well? Let's now look to see how Imam Khomeini applied his revolution. If I were to ask you all, what is the greatest sin? What would you all respond? What would anyone respond? Even a child could probably respond to this. Is anyone, if they can? Sure, right. So, if shirk is that one sin that is not even forgivable, now I ask you, is imperialism and nationalism not a form of shirk? When did it become acceptable to claim that because we are a superpower, or because it is our right to form an illegal religious state, we are able to accomplish our goals at the expense of others? What was so revolutionary about Imam Khomeini was that he recognized these elements of social corruption and worked to have the people fight against them. I mentioned Asabiyya in here. There is a chapter in Imam Khomeini's 40 hadith about Asabiyya. And this is basically racism in a nutshell, or any kind of sort of feeling of nationalism, or any kind of feeling good about who you are or where you come from. No doubt you should have your cultural things that help you towards Islam, but anything above that, that falls under the category of Asabiyya. And the extreme form of that we see with Zionism, and the effects that that has on the world, the Muslim world. So, it is reported that when Imam Khomeini arrived back in Iran from Paris, from his exile in Paris, that 98% of the population voted in favor of establishing the Islamic government in Iran. I want to stop and think about that, because in the news, in the mass media, it really seems like that number isn't so high, or that the mass public in Iran doesn't want the revolution, doesn't want Islam for Iran. So Imam Khomeini must have known that fact, because he was alive during the time, yet he knew he had the support. Well, he knew he had the support. If he wished to enter an election, if you had 98% that say they want the Islamic revolution that you proposed, he knew he would have the support if he wanted to enter an election. Why did he choose not to? He chose reform by revolution, not election by popular vote. This implying that legitimizing the supporters of the Zulm by giving them an equal platform was unacceptable by Islamic standards. Meaning he would not accept going against the Zulm in an open election, because that would be saying that, hey, this is an acceptable alternative for an Islamic republic. I will briefly summarize what I've said to this point, just so that we can kind of recap that after memorizing the Quran and his studies, the late Imam, his focus was on philosophy, logic, irfan, and tafsir, understanding the Quran. He stressed the importance of self-refinement and establishing a self-refinement program. He believed political leadership should be in the hands of the most learned, and rising up both spiritually and politically against Islam's common enemy. And also, like I just mentioned, there is no compromise when approaching or dealing with the Taghut. So, point of reflection, part three. If there is one group of people that I have come across Imam Khomeini being most critical of, if you were to go and look back at Imam Khomeini's book, I haven't read all of it obviously, but from what I did come across, the people that he was the most critical of was the ulama. And he says, you who have declared, and when addressing the ulama, he says, you who have declared yourselves to be followers of the commander of the faithful. He's referring to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. So when you have declared yourselves to be followers of the commander of the faithful, you should at least make a bit of research into the life of that great man and see if you really are one of his followers. Do you know and practice anything of his taqwa and simple unadorned life? Do you know anything of that great man's combat against oppression and injustice and class differences? And of his unhesitating defense and support of the oppressed and persecuted, of how he had lent a hand to the disposed and suffering social classes? Have you put into practice, is this meaning of Shia nothing more than ornamental appearance of Islam? So, it's interesting to see that Imam Khomeini, a scholar, is placing so much emphasis on being critical of the ulama. And I've read many places elsewhere through my reading of his life that he was very critical of the ulama and making sure that they have responsibility, because if they make a mistake, then society becomes corrupted because of them. And that a society cannot function if their scholars are not practicing themselves and not providing the environment for the community to thrive Islamically. Now I would like to take a minute to offer some practical advice that the Imam gave to us people, us all Muslims. He says, you should offer the five prayers on time. And he's not just talking to the people that are baligh and of age. He was also mentioning this, I read in places where people were counting stories of how the Imam, whenever he saw a child, he would ask them, have you prayed your namaz? Have you read your salat? And he emphasized that even if they're not of age, they should still be in the habit of practicing, because he placed such importance on the prayer. He said you should also fast on Mondays and Thursdays as much as possible. Reduce the period of sleep and busy yourself more with the recitation of the Quran. Attach importance to promises. Help the needy. Keep away from places where your character may be suspected. I know for us going through maybe high school, even middle school now these days, and especially colleges when you're out on your own finally, keeping away from places where your character may be suspected, that's a broad category that you should really consider where you're going, where you're hanging out, who you're hanging out with, and see, is this a place where my character would be suspected? Is this a place where the Imam of my time would be able to come anytime and look at me and say, hey, is this really my follower? Is this really the person who claims to be my follower? Do not indulge in talkativeness. Put in regular physical exercise. So it's not just sitting down and reading your books and gaining spirituality and education academically. It's also physical exercises. And it was interesting, I read, and the next one, study more, but I also saw that there was a time where the son of Imam Khomeini was reading during his vacation period. He was studying on his vacation, and the Imam said, I never once compromised my recreational time by studying, and I never once compromise my studying time for recreation. So we should really consider that when it's time to relax, we should relax and let our mind relax, but when it's time to study, we should focus on that. Learn the Arabic language. Be alert in every field. We know that after the Imam memorized the Quran, he went and studied Arabic. It's a lesson that, you know, I should say for myself as well as everyone else, that's the only way we're going to understand Allah's religion is if we understand the language that He revealed it to us in. Do not remember the good you have done, but instead dwell on your past mistakes. This is a deep one because a lot of times we think you've done a lot of good. You know, you've done a lot of good for society. But Imam Khomeini tells us the opposite. Forget that. Forget what you've done in your past. Because even if you're active, even if you go to protests, that's not accomplishing anything. That's being active, but that's not an accomplishment. So dwell instead on your past mistakes so that you stop yourself from doing those things in the future. Keep yourself informed about Muslims. I think we've all heard of the hadith that says, from the Prophet ﷺ, that says that if you don't wake up and are not concerned with the affairs of the Muslim, that, you know, you're not part of this nation. Because ultimately, and that's what I was alluding to in the past and earlier in the presentation, that if we're not paying attention to what's going on in the world, then we'll only stand up when it's our country's turn to be oppressed. When in reality, all Muslims are being oppressed. And we should be standing up at every chance that we have to stand up for our brothers and sisters. And a final message, I'm going to take the words of Imam Khomeini, and this applies to all Muslims. He said, take a step for the sake of God. Dispel the love of this world from your heart, then you will be able to engage in combat. From this moment on, develop and raise this point in your heart that I must be an armed soldier of Islam and sacrifice myself for Islam. I must work for Islam until I am destroyed. Do not make an excuse for yourself that today is inappropriate. Try and be useful for the future of Islam. In short, become a human being. The colonialists are afraid of human beings. They are afraid of man. Become revolutionary within yourself. And inshallah, then you will be of some use to the Imam, including myself. Inshallah, one day we will all be of some use to the Imam when he needs us. Because he needs soldiers who are not just physically fit, or not just academically sound, but people that are well-rounded in all aspects of life, especially well-grounded in spiritual and religious affairs. So with that, I leave you, and inshallah, hopefully, you were able to take something from my presentation. And if I said anything wrong, inshallah, the Mawlana can come up and clarify, maybe if I have made some mistakes in what I said. But with that, I leave you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.